There are some things you don't need to splurge on, but a high-quality mattress isn't one of them. Think about it. You sleep on your mattress every night for years, and the value of good quality sleep impacts your daily routine, so it should never be taken for granted. Avocado Green Mattress is made with superior craftsmanship, better materials, and thoughtful design, so Avocado stays supportive and comfortable for the long haul. And you'll be glad to know that Avocado is committed to maintaining the highest standards of ethical and transparent practices. That means eco-conscious production using renewable, certified organic materials. In fact, every Avocado mattress is made from certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable, non-toxic materials that keep you cooler than synthetic alternatives throughout the night. In case you were wondering, Avocado Green Mattress is a bestseller that comes in three different comfort options: firm, medium, or plush. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. Plus, you can take advantage of up to 1 year sleep trials and generous warranties. To try before you buy, visit one of the Avocado retail stores or Premier Retail Partners to experience the comfort in person. When you want unmatched comfort and support, exceptional quality, and better sleep, look into Avocado Green Mattress. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and save up to 20% on certified organic mattresses during their Labor Day sale. Avocado, dream of better.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and it is Wednesday, August 13th, 2025. Now it is summer, and the season is in full swing. It is hot, hot in some parts of this country, including where I live in downtown Los Angeles. And oftentimes when it gets hot outside and people go out to get some sun and relax, they lose sight of what keeps us all motivated, what keeps us all going. And that is our desire, our job, to continue to prepare for our financial futures. And so here at InvestTalk, in the winter, in the spring, in the fall, and even in the summer, we see our main job, our objective for this podcast and radio program, is to help you become a better and more informed investor. We want to help you understand market dynamics and especially how those dynamics affect your portfolios. In order to do that, I brought a mixture of educational and actionable material that we will be going over today. Of course, however, the most important part of this show is your finance and investment questions. We have plenty ready to play from our anytime listener line, from our YouTube comment section, but hopefully we will get even more as you call in live throughout this next hour to talk directly to me. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But because this is a caller show primarily, let's tackle this question now.
Would like your opinion of the XLE for a long-term hold. Thank you.
Short, sweet, and to the point, XLE is the Energy Select Sector Spider Fund. Essentially what they're doing is they're taking the energy sector names from the S&P 500 and giving them a market cap weighting. What does that end up doing? Well, it means that relative to the rest of the U.S. market, you're probably going to have predominantly large cap names. It's going to be spread all over from oil and gas to consumable fuels to energy equipment services to nuclear energy. And it's going to do that all in a pretty cheap way. About 9 basis points is the expense ratio here. Very large fund, one of the most heavily invested in energy sector funds, about $26 billion under management there. And as expected, 99.37% in the large cap space. Once again, why? Because they're picking from a U.S. large cap index compared to the sector index itself, right, the broad sector index, the MSCI USA IMI, which is the investable market index. Well, that's going to tilt a little bit more mid-cap, small-cap, a little bit of micro-cap. So again, predominantly large fund, fully invested in energy. The big names, there is no capping here. There is no weight capping here, meaning you're going to have 22% in ExxonMobil, 19% in Chevron, 7.67% in ConocoPhillips, et cetera, et cetera. Now, because the energy sector is predominantly controlled by oil and gas names, that is the exposure you're really going to get here. Those big oil and gas names, your Exxons, your Chevrons, your ConocoPhillips. And so if you are looking to get broad exposure to the sector, certainly this is a good, cheap way to do it and have a long-term hold. But if you have, like we do, some opinions on some of the themes that may be leading the sector, well, this isn't exactly the way to go about it. You're going to get large cap, heavy weight to those big names. But if that's what you're looking for, XLE is the way to go. That is the Energy Select Sector Spider Fund, ticker XLE. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic: the new frontier of trading tokenized shares of SpaceX and OpenAI. A new platform is emerging that will allow investors to trade shares of private tech giants like SpaceX and OpenAI with the ease of crypto. But that raises new concerns about risk and accessibility for retail traders. Also, we'll touch on something that I spoke about a little bit last week, but I wanted to dive a tiny bit more into, and that is the new administration order to allow more alternative investments in your 401ks. And so we're going to dig into how some private equity funds make returns in net asset value really hard to find, really incomprehensible. So we'll touch on that story because that is very relevant. Also talk about the housing market a little bit and how it's starting to take a turn. And should we have time at the end of the show, touch a little bit on nuclear power. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on fixed incomes, fixed income choices. And another one on Tilray Brands, Inc., ticker TLRY. So some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're heading into our first break. I welcome your finance and investment questions now. No question is too simple. I hope no question is too complex. But we're not going to find out unless you call. You set the agenda. Call now at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Before we move any further, we got to talk a little bit about the market on this beautiful Wednesday. U.S. stocks closed higher, the Dow up 1.04%. S&P 500 up 32 basis points, NASDAQ up 14. Small caps having another banger of a day, up 1.98%. Equal weight S&P also posted its best day since late May amid some very positive breadth, something we haven't seen really all year. Other areas of strength other than small caps included pharma, biotech names, Apparel names, some regional banks doing particularly well, chemicals, managed care, and home builders. Big tech, though, mostly lower. Apple responding well, however, to some AI robotics headlines. And on the downside, looks like grocers and staple retailers like your Amazons, money center banks, exchanges, and online brokers, some of the underperformers on the day. On the bond side, treasuries were a bit better, though off of best levels. Yields down about 5 to 6 basis points on the day. Dollar index at the same time was down 30 basis points, while gold finished up 20 basis points and crude oil settled down 80. It was an extremely, I would say, uneventful session, right? There's very little in terms of catalyst. Path of least resistance, to me, still seems to be a bit higher, though there is still, as always, downside risk in the market. And that's because the near-term expectation is a shifting given, I wouldn't say cool CPI numbers, right? If you read through the inflation numbers, you certainly see the presence of inflation, especially taking out core and energy or looking at core. But still, you look at where the expectation has moved for Fed easing, you have favorable earnings, you have revision trends, you have low volatility, and the path of least resistance continues to be a little bit more to the upside. Not all rosy. On the bear side, there is a softening labor market. There is a lagged tariff impact on inflation that, although it's not showing as much in CPI, is showing in producers' prices. You're seeing stretched valuations. You're seeing stretched systematic long positioning. You're seeing some structural headwinds for treasuries, and you're seeing a whole lot of leverage back in the system. In terms of the economic calendar, not much really out there today. You did get some Fed speak. Chicago's Goolsbee said he doesn't really like pre-committing to any rate moves. So the meetings ahead will be a game time decision. Bostic from Atlanta saying one rate cut this year is still appropriate, but the Fed has, quote, the luxury to hold because of a remarkably strong labor market. And elsewhere, you have the Treasury Secretary reiterating that a 50 basis point cut may be appropriate in September. So really the predominant conversation is still surrounded by what the September meeting will bring. Looking ahead to tomorrow, Thursday brings PPI and the weekly claims data, where continuing claims will be closely scrutinized after hitting their highest level since late 2021. We got retail sales for July and preliminary University of Michigan sentiment, as well as inflation expectations for August, which will cap off the week on Friday, where you'll also get import prices, Empire State Manufacturing, industrial production, and business inventories. When it comes to retail sales, previews have heightened, or rather highlighted, positive read-throughs from card spending and potential tailwind from extended Amazon Prime event. Therefore, headline retail sales seen up 50 basis points in July, core up 40. We will see those shake out tomorrow. Alrighty, let's keep things moving and get to yet another question. This one come in from the InvestTalk YouTube comment section question bank. From our friend Jimmy Gustafson, it's about Teva Pharmaceuticals. The question is, I have avoided the healthcare sector almost entirely for the past 3 years or so, and many stocks within the sector are down a lot. I really don't like the smaller biotech companies without profits that are pretty comparable with lottery tickets, but I'm not getting especially interested when I think of Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, or Merck either. So I guess my question is, or rather my questions are, is the healthcare biotech space becoming more interesting now after being down and being bad investments for some time? And for example, is Teva Pharmaceuticals a good name in the space in that case? Well, healthcare has been not doing too hot relative to some other sectors. Biotech has been doing okay, a little bit of a resurgence in the past month or so. Medtech doing a bit better than the rest of healthcare. Insurers not doing particularly well. So it's a pretty cyclical, sector-wide, rather, issue. Now, Teva Pharmaceuticals is one of the world's largest generic drug makers. They also have branded pharmaceuticals and active pharmaceutical ingredient manufacturing. Only up about 47 basis points over the past 52 weeks, down 21.91%. And get this, even though it's down 21.91% this year, still outperforming its industry by 4.2%. And that just goes to show you what a poor time the pharmaceutical industry has had. Now, over the past 3 months, where it's only down 1.54%, over the past 3 months, right, they did have a little bit of an earnings beat on July 30th, their adjusted EPS was okay. Revenue slightly missed. They started to announce a strategic acquisition and transformation of their company in the past 3 months, which certainly helped them out. But the revenue growth has slowed, and innovation momentum has slowed with it as well. Take a look at revenue growth. Negative since 2019. This year alone, it is positive, but slightly positive. $16.51 billion to $16.88 billion. At the same time, margins, negative as well. Projected to make a profit again this year, but last year, negative 9.9% net margin. Year before that, negative 3.5%. Operating cash flow falling over the past 5 years pretty consistently. Again, net income becoming more and more negative this year, again, turning a profit, which is certainly good. And then when you look at its relative valuation, it's at about 6.2 times forward-looking earnings, still above the average over the past 5 years. Price to book 2.8, price to cash flow 11.4. Certainly doesn't look cheap relative to where it's been. And from a momentum perspective, again, it doesn't look stellar to me. Certainly not over the past 6 months. You're starting to see maybe the makings of trying to get a little bit of an upward trend. You saw relative strength pick back up a little bit. At the beginning of the year, it's still pretty poor. And so, you know, I do think there is some opportunities within the healthcare space. I think, again, MedTech has been a pretty good place for it. But I don't see anything with this particular name that tells me it is a particularly good deal relative to where it's been over the past couple years, especially with revenue growth that is positive again, but slower. Net income that is positive again, but still cash flow falling. So for now, I'd probably stay away from Teva Pharmaceuticals. Difficult to get a good name within the pharmaceutical space right now, but I'd look elsewhere. We're moving into breaks still to come. My main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now. The InvestTalk line is 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, there is constantly innovation everywhere. And so with the advent of crypto and its more widespread use, it was only a matter of time before tokenization came to stocks. And so our main focus point concerns this topic. The new frontier of trading, tokenized shares of SpaceX and OpenAI. Now, tokenization lets retail investors buy digital tokens, right? Like cryptocurrency, crypto tokens, in order to get exposure to something. In this case, being marketed as a way to get exposure to private company equity, bypassing traditional accredited investor rules, which require you to be a person of considerable wealth in order to access some of these private investments. And these things are popping up in a lot of places. Robinhood, Jarzy, Toro, Kraken, they're all trying to explore ways that they can provide retail investors with tokenized versions of these private securities or even public company shares. What's the benefit? Well, you get access to something that you otherwise might not. You also, if it's trading on the blockchain, could have 24/7 trading that doesn't require the NSCC, National Securities Clearing Corporation, or any other clearinghouse to be the middleman between that trading. But here's the thing. Oftentimes, when somebody pushes you towards something that is new, that you may not fully understand, you need to take a step back because tokens are derivatives. They're not actual equity in the company. They often represent fractional ownership in a special purpose vehicle, which holds some representation of shares of the company, some real shares. But this separation means that you can't actually say, hey, Robinhood, hey, Kraken, hey, whoever the heck I'm trading with, I want to redeem my real tokens for shares. Hypothetically speaking, any ETF you own, when you own a share of an ETF, you could take an in-kind redemption. You didn't have to sell for dollars. You could sell for shares within that fund of the individual holdings in a slice that is pro rata to what you hold. You can't do that necessarily with these tokens. Another problem? Well, we get questions a lot about closed-end funds where the price tends to diverge from the net asset value. The reason being supply and demand of the shares. Same thing here. You can have divergence between what the value of the token is versus what the actual value of what it represents is because the supply is so constrained, meaning there's going to be a speculative premium associated with buying and selling these shares. The limited float means the token prices can inflate far beyond what the actual underlying company's value is. Another thing, let's say that Robinhood or whoever this is decides they want to issue more tokens because, dang it, there's so much demand here. We got to get more people access to this. Well, what does that do? That can crash the token price. It can dilute early holders. If it's issued at inflated prices, it can be disadvantageous to the people that are buying it just so that the platforms themselves can get fees. And so here you have a problem of incentives. Private companies can restrict access to their shares. That means that it could be even harder for brokerage firms to expand token supply. If there's a lot of demand pushing that premium way higher, without the company's cooperation, it's going to be difficult to get the value of that token back down to what the value of the asset actually is. And I'm sure that all of you out there read every 10K for every company you've ever owned, which is me being sarcastic if you're not watching. But you at least have the ability as an investor in a public company to see public disclosures and due diligence and forms and financials. There is no requirement to do that for this type of investment. There is a lack of transparency due to that limited due diligence, the limited publicly available information, meaning that a lot of your bets are speculative at best. And so when you see these people throwing things around, these companies throwing ads around saying you could invest in OpenAI, you can invest in SpaceX, it is not really shares in those companies. Sam Altman himself, when Robinhood first announced this, said, this is not an investment in OpenAI. And so, as always, the only way that you can protect yourself as an investor, protect yourself within the investment industry, is to fully understand what you are transacting in. I am not an anti-crypto person. I think that blockchain technology in and of itself has a lot of widespread potential, including helping to remove some of the frictions of trading such that it can happen more often without necessary middlemen to make sure that both sides of the trade are acting in an appropriate way, that can provide instantaneous settlement, that can provide a very public ledger and a record for how things are trading. But that doesn't mean that every use case will be good, and it doesn't mean that every use case will be safe. And so the main lesson here is, while it does sound really good to be able to get exposure to these private companies, even a slightly deeper look shows you some of the dangers and some of the risks of buying what is really just a derivative and not representative of what they're actually selling. We still got more to come here on Invest Talk. We got to talk about the housing market. We got to talk about private equity, always a favorite topic over here for myself and Justin. Maybe even a little bit about nuclear power, but that all comes after this next break where we will be talking about all those topics and answering more of your questions. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Hiring shouldn't be a hassle, nor a drain on your budget, right? Okay, then maybe you should look into Upwork. Upwork is a one-stop shop to find, hire, and pay top freelance talent. Upwork can save you time and help keep costs in check. The truth is, scaling your business requires the right expertise at the right time. With Upwork, you can find specialized freelancers in marketing, development, design, and more. Experts who are ready to help you take your business to the next level. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. There's no cost to join, so you can register and then browse freelancer profiles. Plus, you can get help drafting a job post and even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that understand you. Upwork makes the entire process easier, simpler, and more affordable with industry-low fees. So, post a job today and hire tomorrow with Upwork. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That is Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I have a quick question about a fixed income scenario. I have about $500-$600 in a different brokerage account that I'm setting up for just fixed income. I'm looking to kind of invest in bonds or treasury bills, but on Fidelity.com, you need at least a minimum of 1,000 to participate in it. But I do know that there's some ETFs based on treasury bills or bonds or something like that. Can you look into me for ETF labeled TBIL and the difference between that and SGOV? I know there are two ETFs that, like, I don't need $1,000 to just put into it, but I'm looking to do something with my cash. I also do know that this might be a short-term play because, as you said before, interest rates might get lower. So that's why I'm kind of looking for like a 1 to 3 month type of a way to park my cash. So looking forward to your advice and thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, now let's take a look at T-Bill, T-B-I-L, and SGOV. So T-Bill, as you'd expect, is a treasury fund. Sometimes it's hard to pull up, but we will get there. T-bill is the U.S. Treasury 3-month bill ETF. Essentially, what that is doing, even though the description here on your screen is ESCO for some reason, is investing in treasury bills with an exact 3-month duration, okay? Meaning that every month they're going to roll those bills and they're going to roll them into a new 3-month bill. It'll always have a duration of 3 months. ESCOV, on the other hand, is going to own various zero coupon treasury bills between 0 and 3 months, meaning you may have a 1 month till exposure, 2 months till exposure, 3 months till exposure. But either way, both of these are very short term and essentially accomplishing the same thing. Oftentimes you'll see retail investors talk about these types of ETFs as essentially being high yield savings accounts because you're getting slightly more yield from these, plus maybe a little tax benefit as well, versus holding it in a high yield savings account. The main difference here, again, is really just the type of bond they're investing in, the duration, right? Rolling the 3 month is what T-bill does. ESGOV spreads it out over 0 to 3. A couple other differences, ESGOV is significantly bigger. So T-bill is about 6 billion right now, ESGOV closer to about 55 billion, I think. Yeah, ESGOV is about closer to 54 billion. It's probably about half as expensive too. ESGOV is about 9 basis points. T-bill is about 15. So from my perspective, ESGOV is going to be more liquid just by virtue of having more assets under management. You don't really get that much of a benefit from just holding a 3-month T-bill. So I would frankly go with ESGOV just because it's cheaper. You're getting very similar exposure, very similar yields with a little bit better liquidity. Thanks for the call. All right, let's make it 2 in a row. This one from our Anytime listener line.
Hi, InvestTalk. Hoping you guys could give me some advice. I took a speculative position like a few months back on Tilray Brands, the cannabis and beverage company. Again, I'm fully aware that they do not make money. They just had earnings that weren't that great, and they issue a ton of shares. And, you know, you're probably like, why did I even buy it? It's just because I wanted to try something speculative. Sure enough, President Trump came out with some article on him talking with a different CEO of another cannabis company about potentially lowering the schedule on cannabis, and it shot up. And it's now like over 200%. It seems to keep going up. And I just am curious how you guys would play this, if you just write it out or just kind of do what I thought I wanted to do, just be speculative and hold it for, you know, a long time was why I got it, just to see, you know, if it ever changed and, you know, took off. It happened so quick, and now I just don't know what to do. Want to hear what you guys would do, and I'll listen on the show. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it there. Tilray Brands, speculative name, engages in consumer packaged goods for cannabis distribution, beverages, and wellness brands. Doesn't make money, right? Big in the medical and adult recreational use space, and down quite a bit over the past 6 months, until really recently, when there was a 177% increase since about mid-May. Okay. And so you see, not only is the price shooting up, though, it was approaching zero pretty quickly here for a minute. Not only is it shooting up, you see this huge spike in volume. But guess what? You bought this for speculative reasons. This is a speculative trade. This is what happens with speculative trades. Some news hits. The president saying maybe looking at the drug schedule. Words, who knows what will happen. Price shoots up. This is the type of name you trade. This is not the type of name you hold for a long-term investment. I don't know where you got in. I can't recall if you said where you got in. But you're at pretty high euphoria right now, up at another 31.51% today. If you're at a profit, I would probably take a lot of it. Because the likelihood in this type of name that, again, doesn't make money, that doesn't even really have much revenue, that likes to issue shares like nobody's business, is that it's probably going to head back down and head back down very quickly. And then guess what? If this is a trading speculative name, you buy it again and you rinse and repeat. So, you know, for this particular name, these type of moves are more likely than steady increases just because of the nature of the investment, which you knew getting into it with this speculative bet. So if it were me, now we're up a bit, I would take a lot of profit, wait for it to cycle back down, because at some point the headlines subside, nothing changes. We just get back to where we were before. Thanks for the call. All righty. Speaking of opaque things, let's talk a little bit about private equity, which is a notoriously opaque industry, even as more funds are seeking to get access to one of the most coveted markets, I would say, in the investment industry, the 401k space. Key disclosures, generally, with any of these funds have a requirement, right, to show original cost, current value, and acquisition date. But within some of these funds, it's kind of difficult to see what is going on with the assets that are owned. That's because a lot of them use a controversial accounting tactic, which involves buying secondary market stakes at steep discounts, then immediately marking them up to their official net asset value, sometimes generating 1,000% return on the asset in a single day. That's because the public disclosure requirements of a lot of these private equity funds aren't what you're seeing with public funds that mark to market every day, that are required by the 40 Act to be representative, pretty representative of the net asset value of the funds. Partners Group Private Equity Master Fund listed 1,089 investments in its main table, but 1,095 cost figures in a 3-page footnote. Just an example of how it can become very difficult for somebody who's seeking to get access to these investments to understand what they are owning. You can't really determine which investments may have questionable markups from the public filings that they show. And what is the one of the number one lessons we always say, understand what you own. Other large funds also use footnotes to try and keep track or maybe even bury some of these controversial tactics, which aren't illegal, but certainly controversial. And so this all goes to say that it undermines a little bit of investor confidence and raises questions about the accuracy and the integrity of a lot of these reported gains. Private funds benefit from a lot of smoothing, right? You have a private equity investment that has a longer horizon, that typically is a buy, hold, liquidate horizon, not a lot of trading on an asset that doesn't trade. And so in times of heightened volatility, you don't see the volatility within the private funds because they're not out there trading and marking their assets to market each and every day. Now, oftentimes this is irrelevant because most investors can't get access to these. Most investors are not accredited investors that can really get into the wide array of private equity funds for their investments. But recent rule changes have started to open the doors for private equity to be able to sell to 401k plans. And so herein lies why this is relevant. It is sometimes impossible to understand truly the cost basis, truly the return of some of these funds, meaning that if you as an investor have the access in the coming years to these types of investments, you owe it to yourself to understand that there are certain ones that you cannot do due diligence on. To understand that if it shows you a return that is too good to be true over a long period of time, chances are it is. To understand that oftentimes within this industry, when investors, retail investors, are starting to get access to things, it's not because the private investors really want to share returns with the average Joe. It's because liquidity's dried up and you are their exit. And so, in the coming years, should this rule continue to go through, should private equity funds become more available to 401ks, please, please, please understand the risks. I'm sure we will be talking about this up until the days that this happens and well beyond. The number one rule, know what you own.
Just wanted to say I love the show. I had a question for you guys. So I'm looking at a REIT. It is called Prologis. The ticker symbol is PLD. Just wanted to get you guys' opinion on it. You know, wonder if this would be a good company to get into. Do you think it's a good investment? And, you know, what would it be an ideal buying point for you guys? Thanks. Just let me know on the next show. Appreciate it.
Okie doke. Ticker PLD, Prologis Inc. It is a real estate investment trust. They specialize in logistics facilities and warehouses. $100 billion market cap, pretty large warehouse owner. Year to date, up about 46 basis points. So the past 52 weeks, down about 13.44%. Still outperforming its industry this year by 2.5% after some pretty strong underperformance last year. Let's take a look at what's been driving the price over the past 3 months. Solid Q2 results. They had strong funds from operation. They've had consistent analyst upgrades over the past couple months into the $120 to $121 range, which is solid. Their momentum has started to reverse course again. Headed into 2025, the name was getting stronger. It's weakened up a little bit, but still not crazy. Again, outperforming a lot of that industry by about 2.5%. Its dividend yield, pretty strong, 3.8% dividend yield. But pulling back 6 months, right? Over the bulk of that, down about 13.44% over the past 52 weeks, you have necessarily headwinds, right? Rising interest rates. Yields starting to tamp down a little bit now, but consistently higher, especially on the longer end of the curve. Understanding that real estate investment trusts primarily do debt financing, this makes it pretty difficult for them. That's weighed down on sentiment. You did, though, have some pretty resilient fundamentals. Global demand for logistics assets still a bit higher. You do have that consistent dividend appeal as well. And so as you start to see some of these e-commerce demand really not fall as much as some thought it would, well, you started to see a little bit of pricing recovery. Again, this divergence is just between it and the S&P 500. This doesn't necessarily mean the price is exactly flat. You're seeing it's a little bit positive. But either way, I think, you know, this is an interesting time to be in REITs. And the reason being is you can still get pretty high yields elsewhere. I don't necessarily believe that we're going to see a massive amount of rate cuts, certainly until next May. Maybe we see one or two cuts. I don't think we see a 50 basis point cut in September. Market right now pricing in essentially 100% chance of some cut in September, but the market's been wrong before. There's still a possibility that inflation shows itself in PCE later, in PPI later, that the labor market doesn't deteriorate enough, and the Fed continues to do what Bostic said they might, which is have the luxury of holding. And so if rates continue to stay higher, well, then you may not see REITs start to outperform as people are searching and reaching for those yields. But given its performance, If you think that rates are starting to come down, you have a path downward consistently, well, that's when REITs start to outperform again. Overall, this name's had pretty solid performance over the past couple quarters. Again, price to funds from operation at a pretty reasonable 17.6%. As the industrial cycle picks up again, certainly this name will benefit. So if you're going to get into anything within the REIT space, I think the e-commerce business warehousing is a good place to do it. And this is a name that has had some pretty solid performance going over the past 6 months. That is Prologis Inc., ticker PLD. Alrighty, when we get back from the break, we will speak to Paul from Walnut Creek, who will probably be the last caller of the day. We're excited to talk to you. But don't forget, you can leave your questions on the Anytime listener line, anytime 24/7, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Paul from Walnut Creek, who has a question about Devon Energy. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
I own the stock.
Okie doke. And you looking for some advice of what to do with it, I guess?
Yeah, I held it long term, and I'm contemplating on selling it, taking the loss that I have. Or I wanted to see what your take is and to see if you think there's any upside that would warrant holding it for the near term.
Yeah, well, taking a look at Devon Energy. Devon Energy has had a pretty solid, I would say, 5-6 year income relative performance, right? It's an exploration, development, and production company looking at oil and natural gas properties, pretty well diversified across several areas. Over the past 52 weeks, down about 24%, outperforming its industry slightly this year. But the past 3 years, underperforming by 23%, 15%, and 29%, respectively, in spite of pretty solid revenue growth over the past 6 years. But most of that was coming out of the pandemic. You had about $4 billion in revenue in 2020. That peaked at $19 billion in 2022. And it's tapered off ever since, right? And the primary reason being, well, 59% of its business comes from oil. Oil's been struggling quite some time in terms of pricing. Anytime oil prices fall, primarily oil companies are going to, well, have worse margins, have worse revenue. And so you've seen falling margins as well, down from a peak of about 30 to about 15.2. But it's put it in a position where it is way cheaper than it has been for quite some time. 7.7 times forward-looking earnings, 1.4 times book value. That's both well below the five-year averages. Free cash flow was negative last year, but it quickly rebounded back to $3.116 billion. And that's why if you go down here, if you're watching at home, you can see free cash flow yield is negative because it's taking into consideration what free cash flow was last year. But maybe that masks what is otherwise a pretty decent free cash flow story. Now, looking over the two-year period, you're starting to see revenue pick up again in spite of oil pricing, which I think is something pretty solid to look at. You're seeing over the past 3 months, you had a slight earnings miss on EPS, but production was up a lot, 15% in oil, 22% in gas, strong relative year-to-date performance, again, up 2.72%, where the rest of the industry is pretty much flat. And so, you know, could this be a little bit of a valuation reset? I think a lot of it is tied to the underlying commodity trends, right? Brent crude, natural gas pricing, been very unfortunate for them. They had long-term contracts that they executed finally that kind of brought back their free cash flow, a little bit of a free cash flow optimization plan, which worked pretty well. From a technical level, though, I mean, it's holding pretty steady above 33. It might be trying to test that once again. But, you know, I think this is just a situation where you have a company that is went through a rough spot, right? Certainly did in 2022, 2023, and 2024. Kind of turned it around towards the end of 2024. You see that in quarterly performance. And now it's just going to be kind of held capture by the commodity cycle. And so I think Devon's a fine name. I don't see any catalysts in the short or medium term, really, that's going to propel it that much higher just because of oil pricing. I think that's really what's holding and dragging it down. So if you feel as though you want to move outside of the energy sector, and this is a name that you want to trim off to reallocate, I think that's perfectly fine. But if you want to have a long-term investment in oil and natural gas, I think Devon's a fine way to go about it. Thanks for the call. Well, unfortunately, we don't have much time to talk about housing. Wanted to focus really on how the pandemic era buyers in boob towns like Atlanta and Austin and Miami, with those ultra low mortgage rates, are kind of finally seeing prices start to decline. I think it's a big story about how housing prices have really fallen in most cities in the past 3 months. The West and the South hit the hardest, and that's in spite of high mortgage rates, which have been squeezing recent buyers. But unfortunately, we don't have much time to talk about that today. So hopefully I can talk about that on Friday when I will be back, because Justin Klein will be back with you here tomorrow on Thursday. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell not all your friends, not all your family, but just one person about Invest Talk. Have them join the family. Help us expand our mission. You can get your episodes and they can get theirs at iTunes and Spotify. You can watch our videos over there on our YouTube, where you can even submit a question in our comments section. And as always, if anything I talked about today made you go, wow, Luke, wasn't thinking about that, I would love to talk about that with you more. Guess what? We talk to listeners all the time. Just got to head over and click on the portfolio review button on investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening. And your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.